Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the now traditional pre-season Premier League Arsecast. And as always, I'm joined by Ken Early of Second Captains. Hello, Ken.
Hello, Andrew, as always. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. How's your summer been?
It's been great. been really good. You know, what can I say?
Did you miss the World Cup this summer?
No, not really. Actually, I was quite glad. You know, I kind of think this World Cup is sort of at an interesting point in the season now. Mm. I mean, it's obviously not good, but I've sort of got my head around it now. You know, like, yeah. Okay, it would have been better just to do it in the normal way and not have to. But it does create an interesting kind of grand national obstacle course element to the season, you know, just and also completely distorts everything because, you know, some players are playing the World Cup and some players are just have a massive break in the middle of the season and will be fully raring to go by the time all the World Cup players get back exhausted. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting element.
It is, yeah. I mean, how big of an impact do you think it is going to have? Because it's probably going to affect the top half of the Premier League table more in terms of the players who are going, the players who are going to be involved, the ones who are going to be, you know, away and jet lagged and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, is it going to create maybe a topsy-turvy kind of season where post-World Cup things go a bit mental for a while and some of the clubs in the bottom half of the table take advantage of that because they've got all these guys who've been, you know, sitting in hammocks and you know, reading magazines for 6 weeks? I'm curious really to see how it goes and which of the top teams copes best.
I must say, actually, I haven't looked at just who is going to be, you know, which teams are going to be more badly affected by this. I mean, obviously you could sit down and have a look at who's playing for who and who's going to be there. I mean, I guess with Man City, I mean, Haaland is Mahrez is Algeria in the World Cup. I'm not sure. Most of their players are going to be going. So, but I don't know. Like, I mean, Crystal Palace, do they have like a load of players? you know, international players. I mean, the Premier League is full of internationals. So, I don't know, to be honest. It's unpredictable. I mean, when you say that I missed the World Cup, like, I mean, a little bit. There was all that stuff at the beginning, oh, the World Cup will be starting now. But then I remember, there was nobody saying, well, the World Cup would be finished now. Mm. The World Cup would be over. When we still have it to look forward to, which is always the best part about the World Cup, is, you know, kind of waiting for it to happen and the initial stages of it before, before it always sort of turns sour in the second half of the tournament.
I don't think Haaland will be going. Norway didn't qualify.
No, he won't. Yeah. So he sorry, he was the only one I could think of at Man City who will have the break. Yeah. Everyone else is going to be, everyone else is pretty much going to be out there.
Right.
So yeah, I'm not sure who's going to be. I mean, if you look at Liverpool, Salah obviously isn't going. Diaz isn't going. You know, I guess most of the rest of the team. Andy Robertson. Mm. Maybe they're slightly better in that exchange. But, you know, all the Premier League teams have going to have a lot of World Cup players, so it's hard to know who's going to. I mean, you know, as long as players don't get injured, it's really the main thing.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about some of the clubs before we talk about Arsenal and stuff, but we'll talk about some of the clubs in the Premier League and what they're doing. And Manchester City have brought in Erling Haaland, and clearly he is an exceptional player, but I think you've made the point that he doesn't really seem like a Pep Guardiola player in that he has a very strong personality. And that doesn't seem to be something that always connects with Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, well, Yeah, there's that, and then there's his style of play. I mean, I think this is just such a fascinating signing. I mean, number one, because Haaland is a superstar. You know, he's a spectacular player who, you know, he draws the eye. He has done amazing things already in his career. I mean, he's got like a phenomenal goal record. I mean, it's 115 goals in 116 games, I think, since he left Norway. And he's scored more than a goal a game in the Champions League as well. I think it's 23 and 20 or something along those lines. So, I mean, no one's done this before. You know, you haven't seen this. Like, look at the early record of Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. It's nothing like this. Like, Ronaldo only figured out how to score when he was like 21, 22. You know what I mean? He used to be an absolute smash the ball wide from the edge of the box merchant. You know, I'm not saying he never scored, but he wasn't like a guy who you expected to get a lot of goals. And that only really started to change around the time of the 2006 World Cup or after that. And, you know, then the improvement was not linear. Like he exploded, you know, he just suddenly became this sort of machine who could score 40 goals. And then Messi kind of followed a similar kind of exponential trajectory. And then the two of them were competing with each other. And they ended up scoring goals at the rate Erling Haaland started off scoring. Right. Yeah. So that's like, that's crazy. Now, of course, there's the sort of qualifier that he has been doing this in Austria and in the Bundesliga in Germany, which is, you know, we've seen some players, you know, Timo Werner, you know, we've seen players scoring a lot of goals there and being unable to score with anything like the same frequency in the Premier League. And I do feel with Haaland, like he's really been hothoused into this phenomenon. Like a lot of it is marketing. Like a lot of it is Mino, right? The late Mino Raiola, sort of trying to figure out, okay, we've got something here with Erling. Now, how are we going to make the biggest possible noise? Like how do we drum the hype up to the maximum level, you know, and how do we control the whole process so that we personally are able to divert the largest share of the massive amounts of cash that clubs are going to be throwing around to try and get this guy. How do we make sure that flows to us rather than between clubs? You know what I mean? So they've sort of mapped his career out very carefully, you know, with these sort of buyout clauses. So they had control over where he went. And, you know, the way, like the price that he had to pay for him wasn't that much, but they're making it up on the wages and the commissions and so on and so forth. But also the fact that he went to Austria and was, you know, banging in a goal a game there. Like a goal a game. Everyone pays attention to that. Now, if Erling Haaland had joined Man City then, for example, he wouldn't have been able to do that. Like, I mean, Man City's a bad example because that's the club that he's literally at now. But what I mean is if, like Ronaldo and Messi, the previous examples I mentioned, they were both at, I mean, Ronaldo's at Man United. I mean, he was at Sporting Lisbon for 5 minutes and Messi was at Barcelona. So right away, they were playing at the very, very top level. And, you know, when they were in their early part of their career scoring pretty infrequently, they were at least getting up to speed with how things were at the very, very, very top level. Whereas Haaland, I think, was flat track bullying it a bit. I mean, it's a bit much just to say an 18 or 19 year old is being a flat track bully. He is still a teenager. But, you know, in the sense that, like, it certainly was an easier level for him to kind of stand out as an absolute prodigy. And, you know, in so doing, they've managed to, you know, it's not just his goal scoring, but also his earnings that have inflated to insane. You know, he's right up there with the top players in history in terms of how much money he's already earning. I mean, he was born in, what, 2000?
Yeah.
So he's sort of been created a little bit. He's been helped along a lot. And now he sort of comes face to face with the real top level. And it's going to be interesting to see how he adapts, because the expectation, obviously, from everybody is Erling Haaland is Superman. He's going to go out there, bang, bang, and, you know, he's going to rip it up and make it look easy. But what we saw from him in the Community Shield was a player who's struggling to get to grips, to figure out where he fits in with the team, how to connect with everybody else. And maybe that'll click with him in a couple of weeks, or maybe it'll take a little bit longer, but he doesn't really have that much longer because Guardiola is in a position where he doesn't really have a lot of games to throw away on sort of, you know what I mean? He needs the team to win pretty much every week. So it does create this this situation of pressure in terms of how quickly he can adapt.
I mean, is it a case maybe that Manchester City, if they sign a player like him, rather than sort of mold him to what they want, is there a measure of adaptation needed from Guardiola himself to sort of harness the talents of Haaland in a way?
Well, Guardiola is not going to do that. You know, Erling Haaland is just one player. A physical player.
Mm.
You know, I thought it was interesting that Gundogan used that phrase. I don't know if you saw the clip of Gundogan. Gundogan was talking about it was in the build up to the Community Shield. It was on ITV, and he was asked, you know, yes or no, if you had Erling Haaland in your team against Real Madrid, this was when they obviously lost the Champions League final. Yeah. Madrid, would you have won the game, or would you have lost the game, whatever it was, yes or no? And it must have been won the game because Gundogan said, well, can I answer it in a different way from yes or no? Honestly, my answer would be no, because we didn't lose the game, in my opinion, because we didn't have a physical striker. We lost the game because we didn't play mature enough in the last minutes of the game. You know, you lay in two goals in the last 5 minutes of the game. That's a disaster. It's not, we didn't lose because we didn't have a striker. But just the use of the word physical about Haaland. I mean, he is physical, but like, surely, it just sounded interesting that I think City may have sort of pigeonholed him a little bit in that way. And I know that from watching Guardiola's career, that it's the thing he rates of least importance, physicality.
Yeah.
You know, when I say physicality, like the kind of physicality that Haaland has, which is to say he's huge and can physically dominate defenders and is quick at running through the middle. I mean, he likes the kind of, you know, Xavi or Iniesta long distance running physicality. He's got Guardiola has no problem with that. That's a great thing. But, you know, he's never been a guy who's overly impressed by, you know, big brutish strikers. I mean, the notion that he should adapt, I think, is one that would offend him, actually. Because why should he adapt? He's the guy who's been delivering, what was it, four league titles?
In the last five years, yeah.
Yeah, four league titles. So this could be five and six this season. You know, it's the most successful Man City team ever. Mm. It's arguably the greatest team to play in English football.
Ooh.
It's a
I don't know.
Arguably. All right, I mean, you could have that argument.
You could argue.
It's an argument that you could make, and it's completely a Guardiola team. You know, in the sense that, like, it's his style, it's his sort of his patterns, his choice of personnel. You know, the last season we were playing without a striker, he would say, well, sometimes we did use a striker, but you know, he has throughout his career favored this like everyone's a midfielder type of approach, and Haaland clearly does not fit into this at all. Now, that's not to say that he can't fit in or score like 40 goals for Man City. He absolutely could, but he doesn't fit into that typical Guardiola pattern, which is why, you know, I think he's going to need to score a lot of goals to stay in the team. Like, it's a politically an interesting one for Guardiola as well, just because of the fact that, like, if you're a kid going to see Man City game, which player do you want to see? Like, you don't want to see this guy sitting on the bench.
No.
And also, I don't know if he's going to be as patient as Grealish was. I mean, Grealish is clearly overawed by Guardiola. Again, another player who really seems to, I think he fits more with what Guardiola is trying to do than Haaland does. You know, in terms of he's capable of playing in just a six-man midfield that controls and keeps possession. But like, he obviously didn't really respond very well to the environment. Let's say, I know that City fans would be like, well, you know, he won the Premier League and, you know, what have you won? It's like, it was a disaster. Like, he virtually disappeared as a player, Jack Grealish, last season.
But I mean, it takes him completely out of what, you know, what he's really brilliant at is being slightly off the cuff, improvisational, you know, and that's not what Pep wants because of the way that he sets up his teams.
No, he was assimilated by the Borg, you know, and he was like he was an irrelevance to City ultimately. You know, they won the Premier League and he was along for the ride, you know what I mean? But he wasn't an important player.
Mm.
They would have won it without him. But they didn't really see. This is why Haaland is part of the same sort of trajectory that City seem to be on now, where as Grealish, which is to say, they're not necessarily buying players who are like Pep machine players. Like, I mean, the example would be someone like Bernardo Silva. You know, like Bernardo Silva is just one of these like decision-making players. You know, decision-making 99. Right, and you know, ball control 98, whatever, pace 82, you know,
yeah,
long distance running 98. So he's like he's an almost archetypal Pep player, in my opinion. I know actually Pep has left him out of the team as well. Like, he had to sort of fight to get back in the team last season. It was all a bit puzzling to me, but rather than go with guys like that, they've gone with just superstars like Grealish. Grealish was just the star of the England team at the Euros. I mean, he wasn't the star because Southgate wouldn't put him on the pitch. But he was like everyone was screaming and all the fans were screaming for Grealish. He was the most popular player. He was the sexiest player who everyone wanted. You know what I mean? Everyone wants Grealish. Southgate was the only one who's like, no, let's, you know, I don't want to put him in the game. Like, and City went to buy him because I feel the City are now in the business of trying to attract eyeballs. I mean, they've got a problem. They're the biggest earning club in the world, but everyone knows that like they don't have anything like that number of supporters, right?
Sure.
How can City be making more money from sponsorship than Real Madrid or whatever? Well, we know how, but like City needs to try and make that less implausible. And someone like Grealish was like, now ignore us, you know, because this is a big thing with City, you know, when they would win they won the domestic treble. And remember that Man City fan at the was it the FA Cup final or something, there was a moment when a City fan started shouting at the journalist, "We won the treble and you'll have fucking Mo Salah on the front page." You know what I mean? Or the back page. That'll be what you'll do because it's corrupt or whatever. So I think that they're kind of looking to kind of get to the next level now. Like, it's like we win everything with Pep. We score all these goals. We sort of dominate teams. Mm. And, you know, at our best, no one can get near us. But Grealish and Haaland, these are players who people want to watch. You know, I mean, these are the guys who can maybe take us to that sort of into the PSG zone. I mean, City are a better team than PSG, clearly. I mean, on a football level, they make a lot more sense. The whole thing is just a better built entity. But, you know, if you happen to flick by a PSG game, you see Neymar, Messi and Mbappe are all playing. Like, I mean, you're going to watch a bit of it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that Haaland and Grealish seem to show that City are going a little bit further away from what Guardiola would necessarily want in terms of the ideal building blocks for his team, and a little bit more towards a kind of more celebrity-driven model.
It'd be lovely or interesting to know, like, if this was absolutely a Guardiola pick, or if this is a sort of, you know, Haaland is a signing that's been made at a club level. Like, I mean, I guess if you're Pep Guardiola and they come to you and say, "We can get you, you know, the hottest young striker in Europe," you have a difficult job saying no to that, even if maybe you might have some reservations about how he would fit into your team.
Honestly, I don't think Guardiola would have wanted him.
The potential for a personality clash here is quite big.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah.
And that is something that I'm kind of crossing my fingers for the new season, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, it's the wish followed to the thought here, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, did you see Guardiola with Alvarez when he scored the goal?
Yeah. Yeah, in the Community Shield.
Just kind of, what are you telling me? You know, that, I don't know. Haaland is not a patient guy, you know. He's not like, I mean, his career has been this overnight success. He's just smashed it everywhere he's been. He's never needed a Pep Guardiola figure to saying, "No, actually, how football is really played is this." You know, this is what you do. And you know, when you look at what happened with Grealish, Hugh Haaland seems to really have clicked with already. When you look at the sort of inhibition, like the kind of second guessing himself, which Grealish was obviously doing because of, you know, being sort of drilled by Pep and all these things.
Yeah,
sort of, what Grealish is thinking as Pep is so talking at him very fast is, "Oh God, like I've never been in this situation before. This guy thinks I'm shit." You know what I mean? That's the, I feel like that's that's kind of what the inner voice in Grealish is saying. Sure. Like, this guy just, he doesn't, everything, yeah, he's trying to correct everything I do, and he's sort of do this, do that, and I'm sort of like, oh, you know. Mm. Whereas every single team Grealish has ever played for before in his life, people are like, give Jackie the ball, you know,
yeah,
get the ball to Jackie,
run.
Like,
yeah.
And that's, and it's like, Jackie, you know, do your thing, and now it's like, so I think he obviously really struggled with that. Haaland maybe is more confident, but I don't think that necessarily means he's more amenable to you know, direction.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, and you already heard Guardiola over the summer saying, you know, it's great when people come into the team who are normal people. You know, I think Kevin's probably our best player. He's so humble. He's such a nice guy. He's so shy. He's humble. He doesn't think he's any better than anyone else, even though he is. You know what I mean? This is the kind of stuff Guardiola was saying, and you're like, it's pretty clear who's getting subtweeted here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? We need to sort of lay down the ground rules for the group. So, you know, maybe it will all go well. And if it does, then you imagine City are going to win the league pretty easily.
Yeah. It'll be very interesting to hear.
I don't think, just to go back to the start of this, I don't think Guardiola would have wanted Haaland. He doesn't need him. He's not the type of player he would go for. I saw a graph the other day, and I can't think of who. Basically, the graph was, it had been plotted out, and it was like a graph of players. And on the x-axis, it was like, was it number of touches in a game? And on the y-axis was percentage of team touches that the player had.
Right.
So it basically describes, you know, a kind of an upward sloping right to left line. You know what I mean? It's sloping upwards from left to right. And so at the top right corner, you know, which is guys who get loads of touches and also have a high share of the touches of the team. You know, you've got like guys like Toni Kroos or Thiago all those types of guys. And then in the bottom, the very bottom left player, i.e. the player with the fewest touches and the least involvement in his team, was Jamie Vardy, right? Which, again, wasn't surprising because, I mean, he literally only just tries to score a goal every so often and doesn't do anything else. But Erling Haaland was really close to Jamie Vardy. he was not getting a lot of touches, you know what I mean? And not everyone needs to be Toni Kroos. And if everyone was, there wouldn't be a lot of goals scored, right?
Sure.
Erling Haaland is obviously, it's not about getting loads of touches. It's not about, you know, dominating your team. But I do feel with Guardiola, he's always preferred players who are able to kind of be part of this Borg, you know, this ball hogging machine. I mean, Phil Foden is more the type of player I think Guardiola would want as a false nine than Haaland as a nine. Again, you know, this is the kind of thing, like literally this entire 15 minutes could end up being this you, you know, as Haaland, the 60 goal. Because I mean, it's not so, people don't score a lot of goals in Guardiola's teams. I mean, you know, remember he had Messi's 73 goals was in a Guardiola team. Yeah. A Guardiola team that didn't win anything that season apart from the cup. But like, it's not as though, it's, you know, the capacity isn't there in a Guardiola team for a central attacker to score a ton of goals. So probably, is that probably enough for the Haaland section?
Yeah, why not? Why not? I mean, I'm just waiting for the first interview where, you know, Pep talks about how he's so happy. So happy with
Erling. He's so nice.
He's so nice. Such a nice
guy. He's not nice.
You don't like him. We know it. And we're waiting for it. Waiting for the fallout. Let's talk about Liverpool for a second. Like, how does Jurgen Klopp continue to battle a team like Manchester City, who, like, you've referred to them as a kind of Borg, which I think we all understand. The money that they spend is, you know, they spend it very well. You have to admit that. They do spend very well on very good players. They don't always go out and spend the most, but, you know, they spend a lot of money on very good players. And they've got a lot of good players as well. So, like, their squad depth is ridiculous. 4 Premier League titles in 5 seasons. Again, they're a fantastic team, but we all know what's behind it. And if you're Liverpool and you've finished second on like 92 points and 91 points, maybe the season before where they didn't win, it was only another point. Maybe it was even more than 91 points. You know, they've won one in the middle of that, but it must be completely disheartening to produce the kind of consistency and quality that Liverpool have produced, which in a normal era would have won them, you know, the Premier League 3 or 4 times at this point, to end up behind this sort of, I don't want to use the word invincible because that's not right. But you know what I mean? No matter how many blows you land on them, they sort of get back up again. So, I mean, is it a thing that you go like, okay, well, we've got to do better. We've got to go harder. At some point, you just go, well, fuck this. Like, what more can we do?
Well, the only thing that would give me a lot of confidence, I mean, the thing that would give me confidence that they will do it is that they've been doing it for years now.
Mm.
Liverpool, you know, in terms of, you know, they their standards haven't really, well, their standards, of course, slipped disastrously in the season after they won the title, when they totally collapsed in the middle of the season. But even that season, they had started quite well. And I think in December, were sort of leading the league, and then it all sort of fell to pieces, and injuries and so on and so forth. But, you know, their capacity to sort of come back from these disappointments. I mean, it's a strange one. It's like the season they had last season was a phenomenal season. You know, like when you the number of games that they played. I mean, I think they lose 5 matches altogether. Unfortunately, one of which was the Champions League final.
Yeah, only 2 in the league.
You know, they did win a couple of cups, although that seems like a kind of just trinkets. You know, that wasn't really what they came for. I mean, Klopp talks about like the parade was huge. You know, I mean, Klopp is a hype man. Like, you know what I mean? He's a I mean, this is his job, is like to try and get everyone feel. I don't know how you could feel good after that. I mean, it was a very disappointing end to the season overall for them. But I suppose, you know, here they are again. Like, I mean, what else are they going to do? I have to say they looked really good against City, I thought, in the Community Shield. I mean, if you were looking at that game, I know the teams haven't got to sort of peak fitness, but you would think, I imagine, as a Liverpool player after that game, well, there's actually not really much between us here. There's nothing between us. We can do this. You know, we can do this. And, you know, they have to... One of the kind of weird aspects of the Premier League now is just that you sort of have to do it from day one. You know, we'll almost know after 5 weeks of the season whether or not, like, you can absolutely blow up and just be left in the dust. Just the pace at which the teams are now accumulate points, like, it doesn't leave any room for like, oh, it's a comeback in the second half of the season. You know what I mean? It's just, that just hasn't been a feature of recent history.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just feel as though it must have been disappointing, but they've probably forgotten about it. I mean, it already seems like forever ago, you know?
Yeah.
Like, whenever the Champions League final was, it seems like it happened about 35 years ago. and the players are living in the same kind of weird accelerated or slowed down reality we all are. So, you know,
they've been relatively quiet in the transfer market, I guess. They've brought in, Darwin Nunez. Luis Diaz came in last season as well, and obviously...
Well, is Darwin Nunez not their record signing? I mean, he's a mega signing by their... I mean,
I was talking more about numbers rather than sort of outlay on one particular player.
Oh, yeah. Well, I suppose if you look at the actual, you know, the net spend... Obviously, the key...
Yeah,
the
that's key what indicator about
net spend. I mean, it's a single-digit... figure, right? It's like, you know, so Transfermarkt, yes, 5 million, less than 5 million according to Transfermarkt's numbers. 77 million spent, 72 million brought in. I mean, that's the thing that Liverpool continue to do very well, is sell players. Now, okay,
oh yeah, this, preaching this, to the choir here. Holy shit! Like, the way we'll come to Arsenal and selling maybe in a minute. But
yeah. Well, I mean, it's just incredible what happens at Arsenal. But, you know, Liverpool. I mean, if this had been Arsenal, obviously it would have been Sadio Mane leaving after the last year of his contract. Whereas in this case, he's sold to Bayern Munich for money.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think they would have wanted to sell him. Is the difference?
Do you not think?
I don't think so. I don't think in the form, certainly, that he was in, the condition that he's in.
Mm.
But they
had to make a decision, though, didn't they, between Mane and Salah? Like, were both of them going into the final year of their contract, both of them sort of pushing 30, they kind of had to make a decision on one of them.
Yeah. So they've gone with Salah, obviously. I mean, I don't know if the option was there to choose Mane instead and send Salah on his way. You know, I'm not sure. But, you know, if you look at it numbers-wise, you know, Salah scores more, sets up more. You know, I mean, if you look at it from that point of view, you know, he is a better player than Mane. But Mane's been a huge player for that team for almost the entire Klopp era.
Yeah.
You know, just the sort of aggression like that he plays the game with, just the kind of, you know, the getting to the ball first, the kind of intensity that he has. Huge player to lose. You know, I think it's a bigger loss certainly to Liverpool than, say, Gabriel Jesus would be for Man City. I mean, I'm not saying that Gabriel Jesus is a good player, but in terms of his importance to the team,
sure,
Mane was much more important. And so it's going to be, you know, they lose something there. But yeah, I mean, once again, I mean, this is the thing that annoys, I think, a lot of Liverpool supporters, the fact that, well, once again, we spent £5 million. You know, I'm not sure exactly how you're meant to compete with Man City on the basis of that. But on the other side, they have at least bought the forward that Jurgen Klopp apparently was very keen to sign. I hope it's on more than the strength of just him playing very well against them in the Champions League, because if this guy doesn't work out, I mean, we talked about Haaland, the pressure on Haaland, but that's kind of almost, even if Haaland is a disaster, like if something, you know, in the worst case actually is he gets injured. I mean, Haaland has missed a few games with injury. You know, obviously that's it. Nobody wants to see that happen. But even if he kind of struggles to adapt or to fit in, and there are issues, and, you know, they lose to Tottenham or something because Haaland hasn't picked someone up, you know what I mean? This type of situation arises, and then Pep puts him on the bench. Even if that happens, you'd still kind of assume that Man City are good enough to get more than 90 points, right?
Yeah.
Like, they don't need him. Like, they've maybe that's like actually slightly changed. The fact is, because they have sold Jesus and they've sold Sterling as well. So, okay, they've lost some players. But if this guy, if Nunez doesn't work for Liverpool, like, absolute curtains. And I think it's, you know, you could say that, you know, there's still Diaz, Jota, Salah, whatever. But to have spent so much money, they really, really need this guy to succeed. It has happened almost all the previous occasions when they've gone really big in the transfer market since Klopp has arrived. Naby Keita, maybe not so much, but they need that to happen again.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the thing about being able to sell well is that it allows you to spend. You know, it's not really been an issue for Arsenal, and we'll come to Arsenal in a couple of minutes. But you know, the idea of like a £5 million net spend as some suggestion that you're not being ambitious isn't quite there, is it? You know, if you can generate money for the players you don't want, I mean, that seems pretty ideal, even if it means at the end of the day, you're sort of balancing your books or whatever, which, you know, in football terms, doesn't seem that important to many fans. But in reality, at some point, if you keep spending 100, 120, 150 million in the summer without getting any money back, you know, you turn into Barcelona. And as we can see from what's happening over there this summer, you know, one of the best run clubs in the world, Martin Brathwaite on £130,000. They kind of deserve that, to be fair, the way they got that player in. But now he won't leave. But I mean, it is.
Doesn't Martin Brathwaite have like a personal fortune of in the hundreds of millions?
Does he? I don't know.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing this before. He's got like a couple of hundred million from his other career as an investor, Martin Brathwaite. But he still wants his money. He still wants his money from Barcelona. It's not about the money. It's about the respect, and it's about proper order. Now they're just trying to bundle this guy out the door. He's got more levers than they have.
Like, yeah. I mean, their strategy of like spending millions on players and then telling other players we can't afford to pay you is pretty pretty cheeky. I think that might be one way of putting it.
I mean, it's just gangsterism. Like, really, it is. Like, it's just like, oh, you know, get out. Like, they're just trying to blackmail players to sort of, they're just hoping that players will sort of crumple.
Yeah.
And just go along with it. Just because they can't take it anymore. You know, that's clearly what they're trying to do with these guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily going to work.
No.
I mean, Real Madrid were trying to do it with Bale for years, and we saw where that got them.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that the players, if they hold out, I mean, Barcelona can try and make their lives miserable. But, you know, at some point you dig in because you just, it's like, well, hang on, why should I?
Yeah.
Why should I go along with being screwed over by you to make your life easier?
Yeah, exactly. You gave me the contract.
Yeah, so, so I would expect them to get paid in the end.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. What about Chelsea's transfer strategy this summer, which appears to be see who other teams are interested in and trying to buy and then trying to buy them? It's quite unique in a way. It's maybe speaks to the new ownership also.
Well, they can't do worse than last season, because last season they bought Lukaku for nearly 100 million and it was just a complete turkey.
Yeah.
And that was a total disaster, which ruined the season, you know. So whatever, however badly Todd Bowley's team, which seems to be mainly
him,
T. Bowley at the moment.
he's director.
Todd Bowley's making a lot of calls.
Yeah, he's director of football.
yeah. His phone is melting, you know, as well with all the action that's going on. He would still struggle to do worse than Marina, Granovsky and Petr Cech did last season. So, I mean, the players who they've signed, Sterling, I kind of got the feeling he was ready to move on from Guardiola. He's like, I've learned enough and now it's time to make my way in the world, you know.
Back home to London and...
Yeah, and sort of maybe have a first team, undisputed first team status, which I think is probably something he feels he deserves at this point in his career. Feels like he's earned that. And still at City after what, seven seasons, he was still not kind of guaranteed to play even most of the matches. And that's despite scoring, you know, a lot. I mean, did he score more goals than anyone else in the time that he was at City?
Maybe
he couldn't be far off. He was certainly one of the top scorers. Maybe, you know, maybe
Aguero.
He didn't get as many as Aguero. Yeah, but you know, he was sort of up there. So this is obviously for personal reasons, good for him to try. He's now a more senior figure in the team. Koulibaly is like a player everybody wanted to sign a couple of years ago, and you know, obviously he sort of plugs a gap. But I mean, there's too many gaps. You know, Chelsea have made a real mess of this. I mean, in terms of letting players walk away on free transfers, to lose someone like Andreas Christensen is a disaster. You know, whatever about Rudiger. Rudiger was kind of, you know, getting towards that stage where it's like, you know, how long of a contract do we really want to give? You know, I mean, he's 30 next year. What, you know, can we really afford to? You know, he's sort of more in that zone. But Christensen was supposed to really be the future of Chelsea's defense. You know what I mean? Like, he's like a really top player. Who's got like a lot of peak years ahead of him, and you know, should not be losing this guy in a free transfer. It's just such a mess that, I mean, obviously they were hit by this. They were completely blindsided by the sanctions and you know, Abramovich being chased out of the UK. I mean, he wasn't actually in the UK, but, you know, obviously what happened there. And when that happens, there's a lot of players going, do I really want to re-sign with this club? And I feel like it's a problem they're surely they have at the moment, which is players looking at Chelsea and thinking, are they still the same Chelsea that we have kind of got used to? You know, we've got used to thinking of Chelsea as the most powerful London club over the last 20 years since Abramovich has been there, right? I mean, they've been like consistently getting the best results out of the clubs in London. They've been winning the Premier League more than anyone else other than Man City. Is that true since Abramovich arrived? I mean, certainly United can't have won many more than them in that period. So they're one of the sort of pillars of English football. But are they still going to be? You know, are Chelsea maybe looking at entering a sort of a few years, a phase a bit more like what Arsenal have been through, you know, in the sort of later Wenger years? Is that kind of maybe what the future holds for them? I'd say there'd be a lot of players who are looking at Chelsea and thinking, I'm going to wait and see. Or at least ask for a lot more.
see what they say.
You know, see what they say. Because there's obviously a sort of a desperation on their side. You saw the stuff Tuchel was saying after they lost to Arsenal was incredible. You know what I mean? Talk about, like, you know, panic stations. Like, for him to come out, like, okay, they've lost 4-0. It's not good. But, like, I didn't like it from Tuchel. I thought this has got a bang of self-preservation off it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This sounds a bit like a guy who's in an almost Frank Lampard kind of way, pointing out there's a disaster coming down the tracks here, and don't say I didn't warn you about it. You know what I mean? As opposed to any kind of, you know, a guy who was still acting as though he was going to be the manager this time next year or in 4 years time, you know, saying, well, you know, whatever sort of more positive way you can react to a bad defeat in preseason. But the way he did is, yeah, you know, we've got a couple of quality, but we need a massive amount of quality players. You know, there's no time and I can't guarantee we're going to be ready. And, you know, it didn't sound too promising, really.
No, I mean, it feels like it's an empire on crumbling foundations, which, you know, obviously from...
Well, the foundations have been Abramovich has propped them up for 20 years. Like, they've consistently spent more than they've earned, despite this big sort of hedge fund operation they have going on with players. You know, they've got this massive portfolio of players that sort of playing the market, you know, like loan players and all this kind of stuff, which I'm sure is turning over some money. But, like, the facts are that over time, the losses accumulated and accumulated and accumulated until they eventually ended up owing Abramovich. What was it? Like a
$2 billion?
$2 billion?
Yeah, something like that.
Like a billion and a half. It was, a huge amount of money. And this was like, so they're chronically, that's what they've got used to, being like this sort of chronically loss-making sugar daddy entity. And Todd Bowley is American, so I'm assuming he's not going to play it that way. You know, he's not, he doesn't want to do that. So quite how he gets from, like, obviously what he wants is to be running a Liverpool type institution. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like a club that's to be able to spend 5 million net in the summer and still think you've got a decent chance of winning the Premier League and Champions League. That's where he wants to get to. It took Liverpool quite a long time to get from where they started to where they, you know, the sort of desirable state that they managed to sort of work themselves into after a few years. So you couldn't expect it to be an easy few years at Chelsea. So and certainly Tuchel didn't really, to me, feel like the kind of calm, statesman-like figure who was prepared to, you know, be while all around were losing their heads, he too was losing his head.
Yeah.
Actually, he was ranting and raving louder than anyone. So,
I mean,
I don't feel confident about him.
It's kind of like, this is not what I signed up for. When I signed up to this job, you know, there was like endless money, endless possibilities in the transfer market. And now clearly lots of players want to leave. There are still players who want to go. I mean, I watched only the highlights of that Arsenal-Chelsea game, but, like, it was hilarious.
It was just hilarious to watch some of them just look at Arsenal players run past them, and like for the goals, the entire concept of marking did not seem to be anything that they were aware of. So yeah, it'll be fun to see, you know, what happens. Meltdowns, of course, in football are fun. Before we very quickly talk about Arsenal, just Manchester United, Erik ten Hag in there, he's having to deal with some disciplinary issues as well, of course. Cristiano Ronaldo just didn't bother coming back for training, then came back for training, called himself the king, and then left at halftime in a game. And Ten Hag is going, what? No, you can't do that. He's got quite a job on his hands to rebuild whatever Manchester United need to be rebuilt into, because I do think, you know, we've talked about Arsenal post Wenger and the way things were. Well, we did this, didn't work. Now we're doing something else. It looks like it's potentially working, but Manchester United have kind of gone from one thing to another thing to another thing in this sort of like a slow rolling stone, gathering the moss of decline, if you like, over the last number of years. And they've got to change the way that they do stuff. And Ten Hag seems like a reasonable choice to try and do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the last season to me has surely got to be their rock bottom, right? I mean, can they sink lower than 58 points?
I hope so. I doubt it.
I don't think they can. I actually don't think. I don't think they can do any worse than that. I think that was as bad. You know, losing 5-2 to Watford or whatever. I mean, there was some crazy. Did they lose 4-0 to Brighton? Well, I have a vague memory of
Brighton, 3 or 4, I think,
thrashing them. You know, they lost 5-0 and 4-0 to Liverpool. They lost to. They just were a total disaster. And I don't think, I think they've got a, the only way is up as far as I'm concerned from that point. Now the Ronaldo thing is crucial that this gets solved. And I think what Ronaldo has done is kind of a bit of a gift to Ten Hag, because Ronaldo is trying to bully his way out. And that's great.
To where, that's great, though? That's the thing. Where?
Who cares?
No, I don't care.
Hopefully Chelsea, right? If you're Man United, you're thinking, well, hopefully Chelsea. Maybe Bowley will be desperate enough
to
get this guy in, you know, and hope that, well, Ronaldo, you know, they can't, you know, I've signed the top player on Facebook or whatever. You know, I've signed the number one followed athlete in the world. I mean, how can the Chelsea fans be angry with me now? That's one possible. I mean, it seems to me like the logical solution here is Ronaldo to go to Sporting Lisbon for a pay cut, you know, because of the emotion. Because, you know, Sporting Lisbon are in the Champions League. I mean, the whole point is that he has to be in the Champions League because he has to keep extending his little record, his big record. I mean, it's like the being the top scorer in the Champions League is a big deal to Ronaldo. He has to keep putting distance between himself and his only rival. What's the current state of that top scorer race? Is Ronaldo, like, how far ahead of Lionel Messi is he? Let me check.
I don't know.
Okay, he is currently 15 goals ahead.
Yeah, so he's
going to score another 15 goals.
Not in one season in the Champions League.
Well, I mean, Messi has. I don't think Messi's ever scored as many as 15. I mean, it's a lot, but it's not inconceivable that Messi could do that. It's not even 16 goals, obviously, to take the lead, and that's the risk that Ronaldo runs if he's not in it for a season. We know there's no chance of that happening to Messi, obviously, with where he is, and so he needs to get back in somehow. Chelsea could offer him that. I mean, it would be crazy, an idiotic signing for Chelsea, obviously, but that doesn't mean it couldn't happen.
Yeah, it's football after
and
all.
But for Sporting, like, okay, it's obviously a different type of signing because, I mean, he's like the greatest Portuguese athlete coming back to his home club. There's a lot of narrative stuff around that. I mean, obviously, Ronaldo would have to take a huge pay cut, but he's already got a lot of money. You know, he's already got a lot of Champions League goals, and he still wants more. So, you know, when you're sort of accumulating these things, you want to keep accumulating them. But from Ten Hag's point of view, this is great. right? The worst thing would be for Ronaldo to be turning up and sort of acting like he was going to be a normal part of the team. By far the best thing is for Ronaldo to angrily force his way out of the club, making it look as though it was Ronaldo's fault and not Ten Hag who kicked him out. That's great, because they have to get rid of him. You know, he can't be there anymore. Like if Man United want to improve at all this season, he can't be there, because he's holding back the whole thing. Like, I mean, you can see the effect on the team is already obvious. Solskjaer lasted what, 8 or 9 matches once Ronaldo had arrived. You know, he was finished really the moment Ronaldo walked in the door. Rangnick comes in, he's like, okay, let's talk about pressing. And Ronaldo's like, you know, like, I mean, clearly I'm not going to do that. So I don't actually know who you are, but like, clearly that idea is never going to fly here. Yeah. And, you know, he wouldn't do it. But it's also the fact that, you know, you see him saving his energy in matches, obviously just for the trying to score. He's not going to waste energy pressing because, you know, he's got more important things that he needs to do in the field, score the goal in every game that like he feels gives him value as a person. But also he needs to save the energy in training as well. You know, see, you got a squad of players who you're trying to, like, this is a pretty sorry bunch of guys, right? In terms of the team that you've taken over, they're in a bad way. They've been through a pretty traumatic season. You saw that thing about like nearly all of the most abused players on social media are Man United players. Yeah. With Ronaldo way out top. Although I'm imagining it was interesting. You see, Ronaldo was way out in front of everyone. I mean, which is not surprising considering his how big his social media, you know, profile is. It's way bigger. It's as big as all the rest of them put together.
Yeah.
Multiple times of that. Okay. So he's obviously going to attract lots of haters. But I imagine that like it wasn't Man United fans mainly abusing Ronaldo. It was just mainly Messi fans or Pessy fans or whatever. But the player underneath him, the only one that had nearly half as many abusive messages was Harry Maguire. And I'd say it was nearly all United fans. You know, like, I mean, my God, like what he's been through, like in terms of, you know, it's grim. But like, so they've been in a bad place. And what do they need to do? They need to get together and work incredibly hard and try to start feeling good about themselves again. That's what they need to do. And the basic building block, the first step that they need to take is to train really hard and to remember that actually being a football player is number one, is an athletic endeavor. Like it's not actually like being an actor anymore. There was a study years ago on Everton. There was a guy who, I can't remember the name of the guy. He was actually an Irish guy who kind of observed Everton. This would have been back in sort of the 70s, early 70s, and kind of spent a season there kind of analyzing them from a kind of an occupational point of view. The guy was doing like a PhD and to try to figure out what was just involved in this job of being a professional footballer. And one of the conclusions I remember from it was, actually, this isn't really like being a sportsman in a lot of other ways. The profession it's most like is acting, right? Like they're like actors, they're highly strung, they're under a lot of pressure from to perform in front of the public. You know, they get a lot of joy out of this. A lot of that is still true, but they're now running like 4 times as much as they were. Yeah, then, you know what I mean? It's like, so like you have to be super fit, and United have not been. Like they, you know, how long is it really since you've seen a United team that looks strong, was able to outrun the opposition?
Yeah.
It's been a while. You have to have that as a minimum starting point. And that's one of the things that Ten Hag has to do, to even just to motivate the squad, you know, to kind of, when players feel like they're working hard, it actually does improve the mood. They think they want to be lazy, but actually they don't. But the problem is if you got Ronaldo there, he doesn't want to run. He's done all the running, and now it's just all about adding goals to the Champions League record. And he is certainly not, he does not want to be running his ass off in training when he's going to need that energy in his legs on Saturday or on Sunday. So for that, like, it's a huge problem for a coach because the thing is that that Ronaldo is not just like an old guy who's kind of doesn't want to train hard every day. He's also like the most famous person at the club, the most famous player in the league, and someone who vastly outranks you in, you know, sort of every aspect of football status. And if he kind of looks at you and kind of raises an eyebrow mockingly at your suggestion of like training routine, like it's everyone else is gonna also, you know, it has a bad effect on the other players. So That's the number one thing. They still haven't solved this problem, but the signs are good that they might be able to solve it because of the way that Ronaldo has behaved, which I think is a gift to Ten Hag.
Yeah, could well be. I mean, obviously I hope it festers right until the end of the window and there's no satisfactory conclusion for anybody other than for him to stay and completely fuck things up from the inside out.
Well, the other thing is the De Jong stuff, right? Because this is also huge for them. Like, if they bring in De Jong, then... given that he played such amazing, he played the best football of his career under Ten Hag for Ajax, and is a player who I think could transform the team. Right? I mean, in terms of he could vastly improve. Vastly is maybe overstating, but he's a player who's capable of improving the performances of everyone surrounding him in the team because he's able to take the ball under pressure. He's able to deal with it under pressure, and he's able to give good passes to people in good positions earlier than. Scott McTominay. you know what I mean? McTominay. Like, I don't know if you saw the story. I think it was in the Telegraph. There was Ronaldo was, he played against Rayo Vallecano for an hour, and then half an hour, he's taken off, and he left or whatever. He left the stadium with Dallo, his sort of, there's an example of like the Dallo went with Ronaldo, probably knew he should have stuck to the end of the game. And Ten Hag was like, this is unacceptable. We're a team. That means you stay to the end. You don't leave the stadium before the game is finished. So that's the thing. But in the same story, it mentioned that Scott McTominay was seen still at Old Trafford an hour after full time. It's like McTominay never goes home. Like, no one wants to be a Man United player more than McTominay. And, that's a great thing. It's a great thing to have a guy or a couple of guys like that in the squad. And he is going to give them everything he's got. But what he's got is not as much as what Frankie de Jong has got. He can, I think, make a lot of difference, maybe in partnership with a player like McTominay. Mm. But in order for any of this to have any relevance, they have to get him out of Barcelona. And, I had thought it was a bit strange for the first like month or so of this saga that United seemed to be the only team who were interested in de Jong. But now Chelsea, as you were saying, Chelsea have been consulting, have been cogging other people's transfer wish lists and have realized that maybe they should get involved as well. And Chelsea are in the Champions League. So whether or not, and in terms of what they're offering, I'm sure that the offers are going up and up as the window gets shorter and shorter. So that would be a big setback, I think, for United, having kind of invested a lot. I assume when they agreed the deal with Barcelona, they kind of assumed, we're going to get this guy. This is a big leap forward for us. To then suddenly be kind of cast back to square one will be tough. And then, the season is obviously starting like on Friday. Mm.
Yeah. Todd Bowley just sort of looking at teamtalk.com and seeing who's buying. Who are they after? Oh, well, we'll get that guy.
I mean, this is like, he's definitely looking at football matches, right? He would be crazy not to look at football matches.
He's looking at them
at this point. Yeah. You use whatever you can. And at this point, I think he is in the, I will just run this through football manager.
List attackers, filter by most expensive, therefore must be the best. So yeah, we'll see what they do. Okay, look, let's talk a little bit about Arsenal and what you make of the summer business, because last summer there was a clear strategy to bring in young players. This summer there's also an addition to that in bringing in some real quality and experience. Gabriel Jesus up front, Zinchenko, winners at Manchester City, so they bring that mentality in. They brought in Fabio Vieira from Porto as well. How do you think the Arsenal squad is looking ahead of the new season?
Short.
What?
Short physically. They have a rule? Do you have to be able to... is there a notch on the wall at 1.75 meters that a dude says no one taller than this is getting into this club?
There's big guys. William Saliba is back. Gabriel is there. Tommy Asa.
Now this
is
summer
there,
though, they bought everyone they signed was maximum 1.75 meters.
Yeah. It's been the small number 10 playmaker kind of physical thing. Yeah, that's fair.
That was just what they've already got the 10 poles. They've got big Aaron. And so on and so forth. Yes. Okay. No, fair enough. I think that they actually do look pretty good now. I feel like it's got to the point now where now Arteta has got to do it this season. Mm. Like, I think when we talked last season, I was saying I thought Arteta was was basically going in the right direction. And, you know, I think maybe it could be good. And actually, the season turned out to be better than I was expecting it to be. But probably where they finished was maybe about par. I mean, obviously, they finished ahead of Man United, which was good. But the caveat there being United were so bad. Like, nobody could beat them to sixth place, right? You couldn't possibly fail to get past them for that. So now I kind of think, like, right, he actually does have the squad now to do this. And when I say do this, I mean get into the Champions League.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is that should be the expectation. And yeah. I don't want to say bare minimum, because seasons can play out and context is important, and it might not happen, but there may be reasons, you know, beyond just being terrible. But, you know, I think that is, if an Arsenal side without really a recognized center forward for like 60% of last season, can finish fifth. If you add somebody like Gabriel Jesus to your team, who is, I don't know if you saw the game, any of the game against Sevilla. I mean, he's just fucking unbelievable. What he brings to the team in terms of his work rate, his ability, his goal scoring. You know, we watched Lacazette last season, who would pick up the ball in midfield and bring somebody else into play, and just could not get into the box to get on the end of things. And the first goal, Jesus scores against Sevilla, picks it up out wide, starts a move, and there, fucking 2 seconds later, he's in the box putting the ball in the back of the net. So I think when you fill a really big need, when you fill that very well, there's no reason why you shouldn't be a bit more optimistic about what you can do during the season.
No, absolutely. And I think he's now got to do it. Like, if they didn't make the Champions League this season, with the squad that they have, with the investment that they've made, I think they will change Arteta, because at a certain point, I mean, I was looking at the figures of Arsenal recently, and it is actually amazing how much money they've spent.
Yeah,
you know, in sort of net terms, or I think they're close to 400 million since Arteta came in. You know, which is mainly to do with their inability to sell anyone.
Yes.
You know, it's that's just like...
that is a problem.
They you know, because Arsenal players are their contracts are too big. They're, you know, overpaid and underperforming players. Nobody wants these guys. So you end up having to give them away or wait till their contract to expire before you can get rid of them. But it seems like maybe they've reached the end of that now, or they've kind of managed to dispose of a lot of the sort of trash that was clogging up their squad. And they do clearly have now some, you know, a kind of an exciting looking attack. I mean, this was the case even before they added Jesus. But you feel like with Jesus, he has the quality to stitch together a lot of this stuff, and also the score. Like, yeah. I mean, it's like you were saying about Lacazette, who could maybe do the first part, but not the second. And, you know, what if, like, we've only known Gabriel Jesus as a Man City player. What if he does a reverse Grealish here? Like, what if there's, what if there's, like, if he just insanely explodes, like, as people are like, well, you know, Pep wanted me to, you know, he was very clear about what he wanted when I was on the ball, whereas here I just, you know, express myself, and that's why I've, you know, that's why I'm at 7 goals after 3 matches. I mean, I see that, I mean, is he the most owned player in fantasy football at the moment? Everybody loves
Jesus. I saw that.
Everyone's expecting him to
he's going to start a lot of games, isn't he? I mean, that's the thing. It's not like Arsenal are replete with a collection of centre forwards where you're looking and going, well, which one of them is going to start? There is really, you know, he is the number one. Eddie Nketiah is the number two. But clearly, Gabriel Jesus, when fit, is going to start a lot of games.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, pretty much whenever he's fit, he'll be in the team, you would imagine. And then Martinelli is, like, such an exciting player. You know, again, a lot of it depends on how they link up. But, you know, if you've got, like, Martinelli, Odegaard, Saka, Jesus, like, you're into the realm now of, like, okay, well, there aren't that many teams in the league that have a better sort of sounding line. I haven't even mentioned, you know, Smith Rowe. You're at that sort of point. Arsenal haven't been in this position for a long time, I think. You know, for sort of the entire time that Aubameyang was at the club, like, I thought Aubameyang was a good player, but it was as though, I mean, the other, Lacazette was sort of their time was overlapping. They never, in my opinion, complemented each other.
No.
There was always this, and there was always this sense of how does this all fit together? Whereas now I can see immediately how this fits together. You know, it's really clear. It's like Jesus in the middle, Martinelli on the left, Saka on the right. I mean, I'm saying this. Saka plays everywhere. I mean, Saka has played all over the place. Odegaard, and then two players in midfield. I mean, if they're going to play with four, I mean, do you think they're going to do that? That's one thing that I was looking at also with Arteta that I don't really like about him, or I found a bit... One of the decisions that he's made in his time that I'd kind of question a little bit is this habit he has or has had of kind of switching between three and four at the back, which to me always seems like, okay, if you want to do that for a game or two, you know, if there's a specific game where you think that maybe three at the back works for a particular reason to do that game, then yeah. Or, you know, vice versa. If you're somebody who likes to play with three, and you know, you think, well, we'll play with the back four here.
It's,
you know, okay.
It's been mostly four now, though. I think he's very much wedded to the four now. I mean, there were a couple of games maybe last season where that happened, and certainly in the early part.
He barely did it last season. It was the season before. I think he started with it, or you know, he ended the season before that by having switched to a three. Then he kind of started last season with a three, and then he changed. So what I mean is this: he's kind of flip flop between the two things, but like for months at a time, which always makes me wonder, well, do you have a clear idea of what it is that you want to do? Because it's pretty difficult to put together a squad or a team that, you know, when you're kind of changing the big pattern of the team, you know, every so often. So that's, you know, I hope that he stays with, I hope that he stays with four.
He will. Yeah. It's definitely a back four team now for sure.
And is Zinchenko a left back?
I think he's a left back because when
he was
they
playing
were
left back against Sevilla, right?
Yeah, he was. And when they were after Lisandro Martinez, that was for him to play at left back and not at center half because 5'9" central defenders in the Premier League aren't that. I don't know if I would do it, you know, regardless of how good a player is. I know there's examples of you know, some 5'9" central defenders who've been about Cannavaro and this Ayala, exactly. You know, but that they're extremely, extremely rare. And if Lisandro Martinez is in that kind of bracket, well, then Manchester United.
Well, I can see what it was attracted Edu to Lisandro Martinez, certainly.
Which is?
Well, his short stature. You know, he does like a 1.75 meter below. I mean, it's the exact opposite approach to Conte. It's going to be interesting to see that. Like Conte, it seems like he won't allow anyone less than 6 feet to sign for Tottenham.
Yeah.
You know, look at Tottenham signing since he arrived. They're all these just big guys, you know, and I have to say, I think in terms of the Premier League, the way of doing things that has more usually been successful. I mean, I think over the last few years, Man City are obviously the dominant team in the last 5 years or whatever, and they are one of the smallest teams, I guess, in the league. But generally in the Premier League, big strong players have been part of the best teams, not least the one that Edu was in himself.
That's very true.
I mean, Edu was like 6 feet tall, was one of the smallest players in the Invincibles team. You know, so he's obviously decided to go in a different direction now. But I can appreciate you don't want to talk about Tottenham, but Tottenham to me look like they could be very strong this season, you know?
Top four, I mean, contenders?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely top four because, you know, because of the problems that Chelsea have, because of the kind of, you know, the United being so bad last season. Like, can you see United adding 20 points? Maybe, but that would still only take them to 78. You know what I mean? Like Tottenham, and the thing that I like about Conte is that he's so clear about what it is that he wants the team to look like. You know, it's like he just has he's just like, okay, and he comes in and quite quickly sets up. It's kind of the opposite from the sort of slight flip-flopping that I sort of detected in Arteta at various points. where am I? Three, am I four? He's like, this is the pattern. These are the types of players that I want.
Mm.
I want them all to be 6 foot plus. I want them all to be, I'm going to spend the entire preseason running them until they puke so that they are going to be one of the fittest teams, or, you know, I'm going to demand that from them.
Yeah.
And that's where we start. And then, okay, we'll figure out game by game what we're going to do in each game. He's also very good at coming up with, you know, little ploys to use in each game. And you could see that in their win against City, particularly, I think, last season. But they're going to be such a strong physical team, which I think is, I think that's...
it's going to make it competitive anyway, for sure, you know, top four. And what I would just say about Arteta and that sort of flip-flopping between the three and the four, I think it was to do with the quality of the defenders that Arsenal had at their disposal. You know, it's different when you're playing with David Luiz, Callum Chambers and Rob Holding than if you're playing with, you know, Gabriel and Ben White or Gabriel and William Saliba. I think that makes a big difference. And he's always talked about the need or his desire for, I think the word he uses is specificity in certain positions. So I think this is very much a back four team now. And, you know, the key difference, hopefully for Arsenal this season, will be further forward because, you know, adding Jesus, adding Vieira, you know, bringing on Martinelli, Odegaard, Saka, etc. It's exciting from that perspective, from an Arsenal fan's.
It really is. So I kind of see them as being. I mean, I don't really. I wonder if maybe Tottenham have a team which is strong enough to actually compete for the title. I think they might do. I think they might be nearly there. I don't know if Arsenal are, but I still think that Arsenal should be capable of getting to the Champions League. Again, it depends on, you know, where Chelsea going to be able to bring in. Like Chelsea, we're talking about signing Frankie de Jong as well. Although I'm not sure if they're sure what they do with them. I feel as though Chelsea are not going to be that strong. So really, I think. I mean, we haven't mentioned Newcastle. I can't believe. I can't believe that Newcastle. They haven't really done anything. Are they? Are they like just the unloved?
It's a tough sell. Even with all the money, it's a tough sell, I think, for players, for top players. And, I think we should probably just knock this on the head now because I've taken up way too much of your time. But I think, you know, you think about when Manchester City got rich, they had to go through a period where they were buying maybe high-profile players, but not necessarily top players, if that makes sense. Guys on the way down or guys who were just like, oh, I'll take all this money. Doesn't make any fucking odds. But, you know, even then, you know, getting somebody to move to Manchester is probably easier than getting somebody to move to Newcastle, with all due respect to the wonderful people of Newcastle.
Well, I don't know if there's too much difference. I mean, I think there's always, you're always able to.
Manchester has good tram,
able
though.
To help people to see the beauty of the Northeast. I mean, they're signing, it looks like, probably James Maddison, right? These are not like live golf style signings, though, you know?
No.
And that must be annoying. That's annoying for Newcastle. But then again, right? I don't know if you saw Greg Norman was on like Tucker Carlson yesterday.
No, I don't tend to watch a lot of Tucker Carlson.
Well, Greg Norman was on talking to Tucker Carlson about how LIV Golf is the future of golf, and Tucker was sucking it up. And they were at like the Trump golf course. And all I'm saying is, do you expect to see Eddie Howe on Tucker Carlson anytime soon? You know, do you expect to see Tucker gazing at him adoringly while Eddie explains his principles of high performance? I don't think so. So what I'm saying is that if you're like the Saudi PIF, it seems as though the golf is opening more doors.
Sure.
Than old Eddie. Has managed to do so far, but you know, you never know. There's still plenty of time left in the window.
There is a whole month more or less to go, and plenty can happen between now and the close of the window. We better leave it there, though. As always, Ken, a pleasure to talk to you. Good luck for the new season, and thank you very much.
Thank you too, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much indeed, as always, to Ken Early. You can find him on Twitter. He is at Ken Early's, and, of course, part of the Second Captains podcast crew. You can subscribe to their stuff on Patreon. Their Monday football podcast is free, but they do lots of other great stuff during the week as well. You can find more details at secondcaptains.com. Right, let's leave it there for this one. There's more to come. Don't worry about that. More Arsenal-centric preseason podcasting very much on the way. For now, though, we'll leave it there. Thank you for listening, as always, and we'll catch you on the next one, which is really soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.